Well, good evening, everybody. It's been a long time since I've done a conference call this late. You all are probably laughing late. It's early. Excuse me, not for me. This is late, especially tonight. I slept really well last night, but I got up about 1:30, got out of bed and got started, but which was about an hour earlier than normal. But I did have a good night's sleep, and I suspect I will tonight. Tomorrow, of course, our Bible study, so we'll get up early for that. Well, we've got an awful lot of people still signing on here, so I'm stalling for a little bit of time just to give everybody two more minutes here. We'll just give a little bit more time. But I'll go get started. We had a very large conference call this afternoon as well. As a matter of fact, it was the largest conference call we ever had. I was getting nervous because I was afraid we were going to hit 1,000, and I couldn't remember if I made a change in the system for that, which apparently I did, because we went well over 1,000, and we will do that again tonight, it looks like. So and people still coming on in big numbers. So we'll get started, and let me just begin to set up the our time tonight, which is an unusual kind of conference call for me. And what I mean by unusual is very much just a conference call that is educational and informative, and then I'll add my opinion. We have been talking, I haven't been talking about it at all, and I've gotten a number of questions about it, and letters and messages and emails talking about the Great Reset. And I've been getting comments about this Great Reset for a very long time. And I've talked about it for a very long time. And generally, when I've talked about it, I've said, well, it's been around 30 years, first of all. It's nothing new, but it's an opportunity for everybody to sell books or newsletters or gold or whatever it might be. I'm not sure exactly what they mean by reset. My meaning or my thought process when I hear the word reset and as it relates to the economy, I think about resetting maybe the value of a dollar, resetting valuations of stocks. A good, strong correction would be considered a reset. So I think of a number of things that other people don't think about. So we're going to spend a little time talking about that reset. So, and what it is. What I want to do is I want to lay out some of the facts. So every time, again, as I've said, every time somebody asks me about it, I say, well, you know, it's been around a very, very long time. That is true. And I usually say, oh, I've been looking at this for 30 years. Well, it's turned out that on, I don't know if it was Tuesday. It was.
What?
So we're back. I believe I'm back. And hopefully you can hear me. Sorry about that. I had to hang up and call back. I was unable. What happened was somebody, a number of people, were unmuting themselves, and I tried to mute them and muted myself and couldn't get myself back. People are still doing it. You cannot unmute yourself. So you need to, everybody is muted. You're going to have to stay that way. I'm afraid to try it again, but everybody's still doing it. Okay. Well, this isn't going to go real well. I've muted everybody. You should not be unmuting yourself. So I'm going to fix it by disconnecting some people, I suspect. Okay, we're going to try it one last time. We'll see how it goes. All right. So not sure where I was or where I left off, but we'll try to pick it up. So the Great Reset, is it a real thing? The terminology is real. The idea is real. And I used to tell people I've been looking at this for 30 years. I found out on Tuesday that it was 36 years. Let me give you a brief history of what it is and what it could possibly mean. So I hate to bore you with all this stuff, but I want to give you at least what I know about it and some of the facts. I won't give you some of the nitty-gritty detail that I would like to, but it's probably not necessary to do that. But in 1968, you all know Rockefeller. In 1968, the Rockefeller estate or foundation, it was really considered the estate of Rockefeller, who used to do philanthropy and investing all over the world, decided that they were going to form a club. They were going to form a club. And that was done in Bellagio, Italy, and it was called the Club of Rome. The Club of Rome, and established the Club of Rome in 1968. And in 1968, 38 or whatever it was years ago, is about the time that this whole idea of repositioning things and everybody and ideology and getting ideology more involved. There was a desire at the time, even back then in 1968, to reshape America. When it originally had started, Rockefeller estate believed that they were doing something good, but they also believed that whatever they wanted to do with this was going to be for the good of America. And it was going to change things, yes, but in the long run, it had a humanity kind of tone to it, that it was good for humanity. In 1972, the Club of Rome published some of their research and some of the things that these were made up mostly of economists and statisticians and things like that. They did a research work and they called it The Limits to Growth. The club believed that not America for sure, but the world was growing out of control. And they were going to use this out of control growth to make statistical data that it was going to be the end of the world, the ruination of not only America, but the world. So sometimes, now there's limits to growth. You can buy this, I guess, at a bookstore or I don't know, Amazon maybe, because there was an update done about 8 years ago, 5 years ago, I don't know, somewhere in that neighborhood, called, and it was just simply called The Limits of Growth 30-year update. 30-year update. So, and sometime between 1968 and 1972, the members of the club, as they were putting this material together for the book and the report, decided that they needed some issues that nobody could argue with, that they would use to springboard this change in the world. And so they were looking for these identifying factors that everybody could understand. And they decided that these enemies, the enemies of the world, the enemies of America, the enemies of Europe, were pollution, global warming, yes, even back then, water shortages. There was going to be a dramatic shortage in water, people were going to die, and famines. Those were the things that the enemies of the world that they were going to address. Later, they got into overpopulation and population control and things like that. But they knew that people weren't going to embrace that right away. So people like Al Gore came along and other scientists and politicians, and Al Gore clinged to the idea of global warming. It was going to, the world was coming to an end, and he was helping in this world effort to push the socialist, communist, kinds of ideology that they considered these or one of them to be the issue that was going to be the crisis that would allow them to take advantage of the crisis and move their very radical agenda forward. And that is what it had gotten to from 1968 to the almost the 90s. It just became a catalyst to drive their ideology. Here's the problem. Those enemies, global warming, famines never happened, water shortages never happened. Of course, they had droughts in parts of the world and famines in parts of the world, but it wasn't big enough to become a crisis that they could drive. I believe that the playbook had been written. The ideology was already aligned with all the people, the power players in this had already aligned with all the powers that they had, but they needed a crisis. So every time we had a market crash in 87, in the 90s, then we had Y2K, you remember that? That was one that they loved. That was going to be the catalyst. Then they had 9/11, or then they had the financial crisis of 2008. Then they had 9/11, all these different events. But none of it was enough. As a matter of fact, some of these events that they were going to use to drive this agenda were actually ended up being uniting. I mean, united 9/11 was a good example of that. People felt united as Americans. It wasn't working. That wasn't going to be it. Global warming just, you know, had too many shaky facts, not enough political drive behind it. It had some very radical globalists on board. That was about it. They couldn't gain any credibility. And this crisis to get socialism, I would call it communism, they would call it socialism, agenda in the world, to develop equality in the world, to control population, which was a big part of their agenda, but they very seldom talked about it, that they were going to need a crisis. So the playbook was ready. They knew what they were going to do. They had it all planned, but they needed the crisis. So every time there was a crisis, the conspiracy theory guys came out and talked about the end of the world. It was going to be this. The UN, the United Nations, were the ones that really embraced everything that they were standing for. And the UN by itself they're the ones that gave it this name, the Great Reset. And they refer to this, the UN, as an equality of the world. And with this equality is going to come the ability and the power to bring all people into submission for all of these things. And it was a very real agenda. There was a lot of people backing it. So it took about 35 years to get from the Club of Rome to the UN, and then their dream came true. So again, in the 1990s, there were several initiatives that were trying to put, they were trying to put out there, the UN primarily, to gain not control over a particular area, but control over the globe, a global system of power and control. Now, remember, my philosophy during this period of time, I think I was right, was simply the United Nations and the people involved there, they had no credibility. They were a do-nothing organization. There were a lot of people paid a lot of money, and they had no clout. They had nothing. They had no credibility. And not only were they going to gain credibility, they were going to gain power and rule the world. Sounds far-fetched, but that was it. So the United Nations began to undertake Agenda 2030. Agenda 2030. Now, Agenda 2030 could only have been adopted with the help of the Obama administration. So it was adopted in 2015. So now we have this Agenda 2030 that was going to be the agenda that were all these things of power grab and socialist and communism that they were going to have in place by 2030. Because from Obama, it was going to go to Clinton. And it was going to be 8 years of Clinton. And they believed by 2030, enough progress, by the end of Clinton's term, by 2020, second term, by 2024, that all the pieces were going to be in place. And Agenda 2030, the stage would be set and ready to go. Well, then they got a dream come true, a global pandemic. It wasn't in their playbook. It wasn't anything that they had ever thought about. It didn't go back. There wasn't even any mention anywhere that I could find in any of their white papers or any of the things that they put out talking about some sort of global illness or pandemic. There was one time back in the 70s where they were talking about a chemical warfare, but it wasn't a biological warfare. But they got exactly what they wanted because they got a global pandemic and everybody was almost immediately put under and in submission. Almost immediately. So some of you have heard me talk about something that I always talk about every year, and it's Davos, Switzerland. It is the World Economic Forum. Well, the guy that started the World Economic Forum was an economist by the name of Klaus Schwab, no relation to the Schwab, like brokers. Klaus Schwab, he was an economist, and he put together the World Economic Forum. Well, guess where old Klaus came from? Klaus came out of, believe it or not, the Club of Rome. He was, he's written, I don't know, co-written. He hadn't written a whole lot of books, but he's written so many books on the economics of the Great Reset, all with somebody else, a very radical kind of economist. So Klaus Schwab, who was a lover of this notion of a Great Reset, made a speech in Davos back in the early 90s. And it was the first time that anybody had publicly talked about the problems with global warming and the end of the world. And it was up to the economic world to fix it. And out of this, and out of Davos, came guys like Larry Fink of BlackRock, you've heard me talk about, and others now on Wall Street, even today, embracing this notion that we've got to save the world. And by the way, on our way to saving the world, we will have all the power and all the control. We will be the most powerful people in the world. And from this Davos and this Agenda 2030 came the socially conscious economists that decided that cutting down trees and drilling for oil was shameful and nobody should be investing in it. From all of this has been developed this notion of attacking the NASDAQ and NASDAQ caving, saying, yes, every company listed has to have members of LGBT on their board. They are now talking about going further and certain things being banned. And Rockefeller was the very first one, the Rockefeller Foundation, to wipe out all of their fossil fuel holdings, which were billions of dollars. They were the first ones to do it. And it didn't get any legs then. That was about 10 years ago. But now we see what's happening. Everybody is doing it. Now, according to Klaus Schwab and Davos, it just got worse. There was a huge, huge win and victory for the Great Reset. And I had never been too concerned about it other than keeping a watchful eye on it. But it was too radical for America, right? Now we have Agenda 2021 coming out of 2015 and Agenda 2030. And Agenda 2021 was simply gain the power now. Agenda 2021 was the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal and the Biden administration. Well, it looks as though, we don't know, there's still some days till next Wednesday, but it looks as though mission was accomplished. It is the first time that these people got a huge victory, was the Biden administration and the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal is a very radical plan. It will be a part of the fiber of economics in America, because it is going to be too lucrative for an administration not to do it. And Biden is there because of the Green New Deal, in my opinion. Now, it gets worse. One thing that I've been watching very closely since 2003 was when Klaus first spoke about it, is the World Economic Forum in Davos. It was first really introduced there among some of the most powerful CEOs and companies in the world, were there. Powerful leaders were there. Klaus Schwab made a very good economic case for a global reset. Everybody embraced it. Not everybody. Most embraced it. Now, according to the World Economic Forum, the future, COVID-19 and the global pandemic. Oh, here we go. Has changed pretty much everything. The global pandemic presents an opportunity now to shape an economic recovery and the future direction of relations, I guess, or I don't know, a future direction of a sense of unity of all countries from shaping all relations, all economies, and all priorities. So Prince Charles from Great Britain introduced the plan. He outlined that it would only happen if people truly want it to happen. I don't think anybody would argue that Prince Charles is not an economist. He's an ideologue. He cares about his ideology and driving an agenda and wants to feel powerful, because he is a very insignificant part of the world and even of Great Britain for that matter. According to the World Economic Forums, the system is starting to get designed. When Prince Charles introduced the plan, he outlined that it will only happen if people want it, yes. But according to Prince Charles, the economic recovery must put the world on a path of sustainability. Now, of course, these people that he was singing to in the choir were all choir members of the path that we are on now is not sustainable. I'm not talking about economic path. I'm talking about the end of the world. And the end of the world was, now we're going back to global warming. It's all about to gain the power, the communist type control, not of America, but of the entire world. The globalists have to come together and design a system. Now, some of you probably don't remember this, but boy, I sure talked about it at length, so I know a whole bunch of you do remember. But back in 2009, I was 2010 and 11. I said, I know people are talking about this national health care. It's going to push us into socialism. It's going to be the worst thing to happen to America. That's all true. It was part of the plan that of coming out of all of this in Davos, that was part of the plan, that Obama's part that he was given. The system, the path of sustainability could only work. Well, so they're all about greenhouse gases, hydrocarbons that are polluting the air, right? And by the way, out of all these countries, America is the only one that reduced it in the last 2 years. And we didn't sign on to the global warming pact in Paris. So anyway, we're never going to have sustainability in our economy, in our healthcare system, in our monetary policies, if we don't control carbon. Let me get back to where I was. I got down a rabbit trail. So back in 2009, there was a bill that was circulating the House of Representatives. And I said to my listeners, you're worried about health care. There is a bill that is the most dangerous piece of legislation to ever even touch the halls of Congress. If it would manage to get approved, which both sides of the aisle were okay with it, we're finished. It's all over. We will lose our country. And it was, you'll remember it, because it's going to come back up again next year. It was called a carbon tax. Do you remember that? We were talking about a carbon tax. And I said, if they do that, instantly, the day the bill was passed, the United States government will have control over every single business in America. Maybe even eventually family. They will have total control over every business. Let me explain to you what it is. The carbon tax was going to charge people taxes on the carbon that they produced. So if you were a power plant, you were going to pay billions of dollars. But here's what was going to happen. The plan that was put out that Prince Charles introduced was a system being redesigned to help carbon pricing. And it was mentioned by Prince Charles at Davos that it was going to be a way that was going to help the world achieve sustainability, so that the earth would be here for future generations. And it was going to be a cost that was going to apply to carbon pollution. It was going to mandate polluters to reduce the amount of gases that they emit, right, into the atmosphere by forcing a tax that would make it prohibitive for businesses to pollute. Now, they never talked about China or India like they were going to go along with this. Were they crazy? The biggest polluters in the world, but, you know, they were going to go after the money and the control of the rest of the free world. That's what they were going to do. Here's how it works. If you're a power plant, we are going to allow you to put into the atmosphere 150 million tons of carbon every year, or pounds, or whatever unit measure they were going to use. We're going to allow you to do that. But here's the thing. If you do anything over that, we're going to fine you. We're going to tax you. We're going to shut you down. You cannot go over that. Then they would go to the small businessman who is an excavating company. So he's running bulldozers and things like that. And they're going to say, your allowances, based on what we know about your business, is going to be 1 million pounds of excavating, or 500,000. Then they are going to develop a trading platform. This was all talked about. That was going to create, this is where Wall Street, in case you're wondering why would Wall Street do this? This is it. This is why. So the governments were going to enforce the law on carbon tax. They were going to make the requirements that you had to purchase permits for your hydrocarbons. So the power plant had to purchase, you know, 2 million units, and the little small baker had to purchase 2,000 units. But if the baker didn't need his 2,000 units, if he didn't use them up, he could put them on the trading floor to be sold to the electric company that needed some more. And who do you think would get rich over the buys and sells of carbon? They would make the market unfair to begin with, only because they would have to. Here's the control mechanism. So your baker that bakes bread, and you go in there to get your fresh bread, maybe you buy a cake or something too while you're there. Unfortunately, he has no control over the fact that he's got to bake his bread for 20 minutes at 400 degrees or whatever it is. He can't control that. That's what he's got to do. And for that 20 minutes, he's emitting certain carbons. But he's got to be careful. So now the baker who baked 26 loaves a day can only bake 6 loaves a day. He would likely be taken out of business. His carbon units would be up for sale. The government could sell them if they take over his business or another business. Law enforcement on the carbon tax would again require these purchasing of the permits, and then Wall Street would create the trading mechanism. And basically, what's going to happen is, under the umbrella of saving the world, they're going to create a trading platform that is going to make billions and billions and billions of dollars. And it is going to bring control. Listen, if you have a lawnmower business that you're cutting grass and you have 6 lawnmowers, you got to have permits. You might not be able to afford them and you may go out of business, but you got to have them. And if you don't have them, you can't be in business. But the government can help you by owning that business, and you pay something back to the government. where the government can just own the business outright and you can work for the government. This is communism. And this is what creates the fall of communism, Marxism, and socialism. So, you know, the least productive country in the world is France. Well, they get to retire when they're 55. They work about 34 hours a week. No matter how hard they work, they get the same amount of money. No matter how slow they work, they get the same amount of money. Why do you work hard milking the cow when you get the milk for free and you don't need to work that hard because you're not gaining anything by doing it? But that's the system that they want to create. The investments will be aimed to some sort of mutual progress, including the accelerating of ecologically friendly investment. And they believe, out of this reset, out of this change, out of this getting a hold of the carbon emissions, is going to start a fourth industrial revolution. And what I mean by that is it's going to start a revolution in the world that is going to be creating a digital economy. A digital economy and a public digital infrastructure. And you all thought that Larry Fink removing all this stuff out of his mutual funds and urging other companies and business roundtables that say they've got to be more socially conscious was just because they didn't want to pollute and they don't like oil. It's part of a master plan to gain control and to create a fourth industrial revolution. But listen, we're not talking about an industrial revolution like we saw in the 50s. We're talking about a global industrial revolution where everything is ecologically friendly and everybody's driving electric cars, and all power in the power plants is coming from windmills and solar panels and biofuels. And everybody is happy because they're living in clean air. And the government now has control of the entire economic system. They control the economic system because they control carbon. So they control you. They control every single business that uses any kind of energy. They control all of it. They can tax it. They can mandate it. They can regulate it. They will control it. Now, I assume that they have derived some sort of solution to the little problem that we have had for the last 2,000 years. It's called greed. They don't address that in any of their solutions to save the world. They just create things that only the rich, the famous, and the powerful can participate in the greed. They're not going to stop that. But you and I won't have a chance to participate in the greed. See, they think that when everybody is equal when everybody is working for the same thing, that greed somehow is going to magically disappear. That somehow the common, ordinary, greedy person won't be anymore. And it'll just be the elitist politician. They will have plenty of greed to go around. So a little bit ago, when I said it gets worse, guess what happened this week? The World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, this year, let me just say that every year they have a theme. Every year they have a theme. And this year, their theme is now Agenda 21. Their theme is the reset of the global system. It's one thing to not hide it anymore, to speak about it in open forum. It's another thing to put it out there for all the world to see. They would have never done this under a Trump administration. But they're doing it under a Biden administration because Biden, or Kamala Harris, I should say, are globalists. They're globalists. The World Economic Forum is for the world. It is to bring together the powers of the world so that the world can be conquered. That they can own the world. They're naive enough to believe that they're going to have cooperation from China and Russia. That China is going to put away their desires to control the world. That Russia is going to just forget about their need to participate in, as a world power. That Iran's not going to have a problem with any of this. They're just going to embrace it and love it and fall into lockstep to be part of this. And let me just add, these are intelligent people that believe all these things and are going to do it. So much so that this early spring, we will see the opening of the World Economic Forum in Davos. And I would suspect that the headline or the motto or agenda is not going to be part of the subtitle of the World Economic Forum this year, because nobody will want to explain it. Now, I believe, as I did before the election, that it's the end of our republic. And the globalists, even though they are wrong about thinking that they and they alone will have all the power or want the power, that the only person that controls the limits of growth is God. And that this year at the World Economic Forum, they will in a very grand way be mocking God. God said, I shall not be mocked. And God might just say, you may have the desires of your heart. The great reset that will follow will be a devastating journey down a hopeless economic road. And I stick to what I've been saying for years. Few people know what all this means, and few people have read everything that their plans are. You can draw some very stark conclusions of where they want to take the world. But you all need to understand, as you panic and listen to the conspiracy theories in all of this, and there are many, too numerous to even mention. I'm sure I don't even know them all. You know, everybody puts a different spin on it. I'm just telling you what the facts are. And none of those facts lead to something that the average person can protect against. The only way to protect against it is through leadership. And it would appear as though we have given that up. So the politicians, the Republican politicians, that will be wailing and whining and gnashing of teeth at what happened to America will never be able to shave again, because they won't be able to look in the mirror every morning and stare at the reason why all this has happened. But let me say this. You should know me by now. I'm a pragmatist. I'm a logical thinker. I want somebody to tell me how their gold is going to save them, how somebody's newsletter is going to save them, how hoarding cash is going to save them, how getting out of the market or getting in the market is going to save them. Somebody needs to tell me that and explain to me that if their conspiracy theory comes true, I'm not talking about this. This is not a conspiracy theory. I gave you facts. This is all factual. How it's going to save them. That's where the conspiracy theory comes in. Listen, I knew 10 years ago that I could write a book about this and sell a million copies and retire if I wanted to. I still could, because I would submit to you that I know far more about this, not because I'm smart, because I've been doing a lot of homework for a lot of years, than most people. But when I do homework to stare at a problem, I only look at it from the perspective of what is the solution, and is the solution logical and workable. And that's all we can do. The solution is a simple one, but one that most people can't do. The solution is we 100% lean on the Lord and care only about the will of God. We pray fervently for the nation that God has given us, and don't whine and moan and say we got to pray harder because God didn't answer our prayers the way we wanted them answered. we need to pray fervently that His will be done. We need to have enough understanding of His will to know that it is perfect. It is perfect. And someday we'll be in glory and have an understanding of why that is. But we will sit back. We won't have to sit back long. We will sit and say, oh, okay. That makes so much sense. Thank you, Lord. We never stop to pause and think about what the Lord is saving us from. We have no idea what He's already saved us from. We also have no idea of what He's doing. I'll tell you a horrible story, and it makes me sad when I think about it. It was Thanksgiving after Katrina. I was in New Orleans. And three of us had helped this family for a couple days. And she said, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? We said, well, we're not doing anything. We're going to be in town and we're giving out turkeys. And she said, well, was it Thanksgiving or was it Christmas? I think it was Thanksgiving. I'm trying to think, because that whole year, both of those times I was there. She said, would you come to our house? And we said, sure. And we went. And it was her family and her, and we went. And we stayed all day. We had a great time. And her sister told me a story after I was done praying. We ate some more, and she told me a story about the worst thing that she had ever seen. She saw a baby, an infant, that was washed and plastered against a chain link fence. It was dead and in glory. And she told me, I don't understand what God was doing and why He did that. And all I could say to her was, what we don't understand is the goodness of God that He did that. What we don't understand is the rejoicing in heaven as a result of that baby coming there. What we don't understand is, again, what the baby was saved from or why that happened. But we do know that beyond a shadow of a doubt, it was the best thing that ever happened to that child. And it is that thing that we have to rest on. And we have to rest on you aren't going to protect yourself from the depravity, the greed, the lust of the flesh, lust meaning the covetousness of greed. We're not protecting ourselves against this depraved world that has gotten worse and worse. We have a president. We could have a president on Thursday, a week from now, that is perfectly okay allowing a baby that was born to be made comfortable and die. And we're worried about our stinking money that we think is going to save us from the depravity of the world, that we think is going to save us from starvation. If there is a reset in the currency, I'm not in that camp. But if there is, it won't matter what you've done. Everything that you own has just been reset. Everything, all the things that you did to protect yourself has just been reset. Your bag of rice on the shelf, your jar of peanut butter on the shelf, that's going to help you. But you're losing sleep. Some of you are losing sleep over the natural cycles of the market. And because of the crying out that there is going to be this great reset, we're all going to die, we're going to change that or fix that. Oh, I have some land that I can go pitch a tent on and raise vegetables and a few cows, and I can probably last a pretty long time. But it's not going to be my cash that I've hoarded or anything else that I've done. So I sound frustrated when I talk about the Great Reset, people call me. There is no logical, listen, no logical thing that you can do. No logical thing that you can do. There are things you can do that you can chase after. The conspiracy theories, the this, that, and the other. You can do all those things. And I don't have a problem with it if it helps you sleep and now all of a sudden you're not worried anymore because you can. But that worry will turn into what if it doesn't work? Or what if I didn't do enough of it? Or what if it gets stolen? Or what if the house burns down? Or what if, I mean, you're never going to be settled. It's not going to settle you. All I would say to you is we need to stop worrying about the Great Reset. Worry about the Second Coming. Worry about where we stand in the Lord. And let's continue to do what is logical in the environment that we live. We have the depravity into the White House, to the likes of which we have never imagined. We could have that. We could have an entire administration that are depraved people, to the likes of which we never thought we would see in America. We could have all those things. But I will tell you, that's God's will. I don't know why, but I know it's for our good. It is the answer to our prayer. We just don't know it. Doesn't mean we stop praying. Our prayer has been answered. We've got to keep praying. But that's the answer. So look, don't throw money at an illogical idea that you think that is going to help you get through something that you don't even understand or can't understand. Yet you're reading this, that, or the other thing, and you think you have a general understanding, and what you understand is if you do this, you're going to get through that. You need to think logically and use your common sense. This has been around since 1968. It has grown. It has gotten worse, and it has gotten help from the pandemic. It will get help from the bad economy, and it will get help from a bankrupt America. But bankrupt is bankrupt, whether you have $1 million in cash or whether you have nothing. You're going to be as bankrupt as most people. When we have a collapse in society and all things, money becomes extremely insignificant. So it may give you some self-worth and help you feel better, but it isn't going to save anybody. And we need to understand that. The limits of growth are non-existent. the 30-year update on the limits of growth are non-existent. The 35-year update that I would suspect will come out because of the pandemic isn't real, because only God can limit growth. Only God can take care of an overpopulation or an underpopulation. The problem is, it's all because of greed. It's all because of the lack of work of church. You really believe that there's not enough food on this earth to feed every person? Does anybody really believe that? Yeah, like the left. It's not true. That's slap in the face to believe that to God. He's provided for everybody. But he's also allowed us a free will to live in as a fallen man in a corrupt society. And greed has created a food shortage, starvation, lack of clean water, greed. Nothing else, greed. It isn't God. So the Great Reset has been around 38 years. We now are on the verge of losing all the power through corrupt elections. And now we're going to have it pronounced in Davos, Switzerland, at the World Economic Forum in 2020. One, the Great Reset has come a long way. There's no conspiracy theory here. They're just the facts. And when we put the facts together and realize that we, you and I'm not talking about the elite billionaire on Wall Street, that one that is creating all the power for him or herself. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about you and I. The average person. We will be all in one place, praising God where you know, and living the life that we can eke out. It's not going to be a good thing. Or we will be called up, as it says in Thessalonians. We're going to be called up out of this prior to the unbearable things that are yet to happen. All right. Well, I appreciate you. I wish everybody would have heard the last 10 minutes. We lost about 150 people in that, but we're still at well over 1,000 people here. And I'm glad you hung in there, and I hope it wasn't too boring. And you'll go back and listen to this, I'm sure. We're not going to leave it on the up on the website long. We'll leave it up there maybe till Monday evening and give everybody a chance that wasn't on to listen to it. I hope you have a great night. Thank you for allowing me to elaborate on some things that I don't normally like to talk about. But 2021 is going to be a year of truth for me. It's going to be a year that I'm going to say things that I've never said before. I'm not holding back anymore. I am going to work harder to find solutions so that I can talk about the problems in a bigger way, but offer up a solution. And I promise you the solution I offer, I promise you, will never be to benefit me or the ministry personally. Not going to happen. But it'll be to benefit God's people to be able to continue to do the work of the kingdom. All right, have a great night. Sleep well. God bless.